there are issues to the system, but this is kind of one where the system did work. It did catch this well before anyone signed.
What's up, everyone? It is Hot Sheet, off-season edition. Scotty Braun and JJ Cooper and Jeff Ponce from Baseball America. And before we even hit first move, I know usually I do the kind of housekeeping talking for the first 30 seconds, but due to the fact that I have a cold, and I'm also proud to hear from JJ on what you guys are unveiling over the next several weeks, why don't you tell everyone what today and really this week marks and how it's going to affect the show?
Welcome to prospect season. The World Series is over, which means the off season is here. We are all waiting to see if Gerrit Cole, you know, what the news is going to be there. But if you're at Baseball America, what it means is we've already been hard at work putting together our top 10s, which will lead to top 30 prospect lists, which will lead to the prospect handbook. But starting today, basically, if you go to baseballamerica.com, pretty much any weekday, Monday through Friday, for about the next 2 months, we're going to have a top 10. Today, we rolled out the Braves top 10 to start it off, but that's what we're going to talk about today. But you're going to see that going pretty much continually from now, you know, almost to Christmas. So enjoy prospect season at baseballamerica.com.
Yeah, and let's get it started with our first move. All right, so let's get to the NL East. I mean, you want to kick things off, Jeff, on what to expect here. So obviously, everyone, we encourage you to get a Baseball America subscription if you don't have one already, and please subscribe to this channel if you're new to the party. But we're focusing on the NL East this week with the rankings, like JJ mentioned. We got the Braves down pat, Marlins tomorrow. Give us a little general scope of what the NL East looks like in terms of prospects.
Yeah, I think, you know, pretty good systems across the board. There's really maybe only one system here that kind of lacks any star power. I'd say like that's the Braves, but certainly has a pretty good number one prospect in Drake Baldwin. Just a lot of pitching, a lot of injured pitching within that Braves system. But then I think, you know, you look at the Mets are a pretty exciting group. Was reading through that top 10 actually prior to the show. Of course, you got Jet Williams. And there's some other surprises that will come out in that list as well. Some good position players. I was actually kind of shocked at the number of position players that are inside their top 10, considering how good their pitching is. And, you know, then you look at a team like the Nationals, who are stacked still at the top of their top 10 as probably any team in baseball is. And then I think, you know, you look at the Marlins, kind of a sneaky system. I think it's kind of the same story with the Phillies. There's some players in the back end of their top 10 that I think are pretty exciting and have, you know, big upside potentially as well. So kind of an interesting group overall, I think, in the NL East.
And if I look at them, Jeff mentioned the Nationals. The Nationals graduated some really good talent led by James Wood this year. Dylan Cruz is still eligible. You know, he's our number one prospect for the Nationals. But I think probably, if I'm looking at why I would argue that the Nationals, you know, kind of stand at kind of near the top or at the top of this list of NL East teams as far as top 10s, it would be because of the development, the improvement of a Travis Sikora, of a Harlan Susanna this year, who kind of gave them some pitching prospects really to be pretty excited about. And that's something that we kind of haven't had. A Kay Cavalli coming back as well. We haven't had a whole lot of that with the Nationals. Kind of gives them a second boost to go with kind of this premium outfield talent that they've brought up. And I want to give them credit for Jacob Young too, who's ended up being a really good defensive center fielder as well. I kind of look at them, Jeff, like as I'm looking at it myself, you know, my personal opinion, Mets or Phillies are probably the second most stacked top 10 to me. The thing with the Mets is I kind of like their position player depth. If you're going to make argue the Phillies, I think that they're a little further away, but you have Andrew Painter, a truly premium pitching prospect. But then you have kind of guys like, you know, Starlin Cava, Eduardo Tate, and all that are a little further away, but really kind of give you a lot of kind of interesting high upside prospects.
Yeah, and I think the guy that I actually hone in on in the Phillies top 10 or two of them are Griffin Burkholder, who I know some teams had kicked around potentially taking there in the back end of the first round this year. Dante Norrie, who of course went in the back end of the first round, I think both really exciting players with, you know, big upside tools. I think you sort of look across the board at their scouting grades, tool grades. There's a lot of 55s. You see some 70s mixed in. They're both 70 runners with, you know, potential to develop interesting hit tools or pop and kind of, you know, upsidey offensive profiles. That said, to me, I think it's the Mets, and it's beyond the top 10 even, because I do think that there's some players who are outside of the Mets top 10, maybe, you know, 3 to 5, who probably crack the back end of the Phillies top 10 or some of these other teams. There was more of a conversation there. I like their depth. And, you know, a majority of these players outside of, you know, a couple of hitters here in Clifford and Gilbert, most of those guys were drafted or signed by the Mets. So it's a really interesting group. Maybe I'm a little bit higher on just the overall upside of the pitching group as well, where I think you could be looking at, you know, Christian Scott, of course, was in the rotation this year, will be, you know, out of commission for a year or so. But eventually, in a few years, you could be talking about an entirely homegrown rotation, or at least enough major league starting pitchers. Maybe they're not pitching for the Mets at that point, but guys that were in the system at one point in time where, you know, there's 5 or 6 starters, because I do think they have some really up arrow pitching prospects in this system at the moment.
And kind of continuing going through this, you mentioned about the Braves. It may not be that they're not, this is not a Braves system that has 4 top 50 prospects, which we do remember they had that, you know, if you go back to like 2018 when Acuna and Albies and all were kind of coming up. But I do want to note, like, I actually kind of like what the Braves did this year, like Drake Baldwin taking a step forward, the Missouri State product, giving them kind of a top 100 caliber prospect, position player prospect, something they haven't been able to say for a few years. They still have pitching, you know, they always have pitching. This is an organization that emphasizes going after pitching, but to see a Baldwin, to see a Nacho Alvarez, who, you know, is again close to the big leagues, made it up briefly last year, to have guys like that to go with the Hurston Waldrops and the AJ Smith Shavers and the Owen Murphys and the thousand of pitching prospects that they draft seemingly year after year, I kind of like that the Braves have rounded it out a little bit more this year, although they're still going to be pitching heavy. They're still going to focus on bringing pitchers to this, you know, up to the big leagues. They got Schwellenbach did that. Spencer Schwellenbach, obviously a big win for them last year. And that kind of leads into the Marlins, and the Marlins, I would say, Jeff, this is an organization that's kind of been a little bit schizophrenic. They've kind of gone in multiple different directions. They've had multiple, different leadership. You know, the Kim Ng was there, got into the playoffs, then Kim Ng's gone. Now it's the Peter Bendix group, and there's kind of been some reshuffling reorganization. But Thomas White is that's what you want as a number one prospect. Thomas White is, you know, maybe not in that top tier pitching prospect yet, but it would be shocking to see him get there. They did add a lot of depth at the deadline. It's kind of more, I would say, lower in depth, because the guys that they were trading away weren't the guys who were going to, there were no Juan Sotos that they were trading away. But is there, to you, Jeff, some reason for hope in this Marlins farm system as well, or maybe not?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the scouting group was turned over so heavily this year, and things have certainly changed. They're remaking that group, certainly in Bendix's image. We'll see how that all works out. Typically, a lot of those folks that have come from, you know, the Rays front office background have done pretty well in terms of building up the farm system. They made some good trades. They acquired some players. None of these guys obviously are top 100 players right now, or probably will be. But, you know, I do think you look at a player like Thomas White, and they went with the double aces sort of, you know, prep philosophy in the 23 draft. And, you know, it kind of dulls the burn of the Noble Meyer potential miss, because I think there's been a lot of negativity actually around that player and that pick in particular, where White's been the opposite. And I do think you're accurate in saying he's sort of that next tier of very good pitching prospects, where, you know, he's not among the Jobs and the Painters and the Bubba Chandlers and the, you know, that ilk at this point, where all those guys are sort of, you know, on the cusp of the major leagues or have been in the major leagues in Jobs' case. You know, I think White is sort of that next group of the best pitching prospects that were in the lower levels, we'll call it. It's big stuff. the performance was good. It's a Northeast prep arm where there's some projection sort of left too, just from an experience standpoint. So I think there's a lot to like there reading through the system. There are a few pitchers that I think maybe have some more upside coming over from the Padres and Mazur and Snelling. PJ Morlando, their first round pick this year, can hit. There is some talent in this top 10. It's just a matter of, you know, are they able to develop hitters and pitchers simultaneously, which is something that the previous groups really haven't been able to do.
So here's the deal. If you're subscribed to Baseball America, you'll get that top 10 on the Marlins tomorrow. The Braves is already out. The rest of the organizations in the NL East will lay out over the next several days. And let's talk right now to a pitching prospect in the Philly system joining us on Baseball America Hot Sheet. It's Griff McGarry. Griff, how's it going, man? How's your offseason?
It's been great so far. Out here in Arizona, I'm really enjoying it so far. Appreciate you guys having me on.
No, great to have you on. Really appreciate the time. JJ, you want to kick it off?
Yeah, thank you for joining us, Griff. You know, kind of, Scott kind of asked how your offseason going, but I'll kind of, I guess, change it a little bit and like, what does your offseason look like? Obviously, nowadays, we're now in a world where professional baseball players, the offseason is just a different season to get ready for the next season. But so what does your offseason look like? What do you hope to do to get you ready for 2025?
Yeah, kind of a part of what I've been focusing on here in the fall league is a lot on command and kind of getting that confidence back. I'm back in a starting role here, so able to hammer the routine part of it. And yeah, I mean, heading into the off season, I want to continue to work on command. I've seen a little bit of a jump here in the past couple months, and I just really want to focus on that heading into next spring and continue that into the season.
Kind of following up on that with your command, is there something, obviously it's repeating it is always kind of the challenge, but is there something that where you know when you're on the mound, like, okay, if this is going right, I'm then feeling really good about, you know, my location, my ability to my command and control. Whereas, okay, that's where I got to get back to. Is there kind of a, you know, any mental cues you have, or are there things where you know when it's feeling good versus where I've got to get back to that?
Yeah, I think a big part of it is just kind of slowing the game down a little bit, you know, using the clock to my advantage, just being able to you know, have a little bit of clock management and find consistency, you know, as that clock ticks down and knowing that I have the time, not kind of rushing into that next pitch. But yeah, I think a lot of it is just, you know, finding that intent before, you know, I step back on the rubber, and especially if I fall behind in the count, kind of using that as a reset to, you know, regain a little bit and find it within.
Griff, dating back to your days at UVA, you've always had huge stuff. You know, I know command has always been kind of the thing that you've been seeking out over the last couple of years. You've had it at points and not had it at others. In terms of your arsenal, like, it's a deep pitch mix. You have a bunch of pitches that move a variety of different directions. Has there been stuff that you've cut back on throwing just because you're like, I don't know, is the movement too big to get into the zone, or just doesn't play off of other stuff? Just how much of the honing your command has also been like honing your arsenal and really going after play hitters with your best pitches?
Yeah, one thing at the beginning of this year during spring training, we had talked about with the pitching staff was going to three pitch mix. So I initially had eliminated my slider heading into the season. And then about halfway through the season, I had a little hiccup injury in my low back and kind of went back to the slider instead of the curveball. And since then, it's felt pretty good. Just focusing on those three pitches. I definitely still have others in my back pocket, but for now, just focusing on a fastball, a slider, and cutter.
Also, Griff, how's it different for you? Like you said, you've started, you've relieved. Obviously, there's a difference of the approach of it, but is there a difference of kind of how you attack hitters when you're starting versus how you attack hitters when you're, you know, coming out of the pen?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, when you're coming out of the pen, you got to have your best stuff. That's kind of expected. So, you know, whatever is feeling great in the bullpen is what you're going to be throwing in the game. So as a starter, a little bit different. I think you kind of have a little bit more time to hone in on, you know, what you want to throw that day. And as you prepare, you know, in the week leading up, you know, just day to day kind of honing in on, you know, what pitches you think you'd throw later that week, and especially depending on the hitters you'll be facing. But yeah, I think it's definitely a big difference, but you know, at the same time, the mentality part stays the same. Go in and attack the zone and fill it up.
Hey Griff, can you tell me about your experiences with the ABS automatic balls and strikes system so far? And if you're a fan of that technology versus a challenge system versus human element.
Yeah, I think, you know, I had pretty much a full year with it.
When it comes to hiring, don't go searching for the one. Just meet your match with Indeed. If you hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform for over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed at Baseball America is that it makes hiring easy. Everything's in one place. I get my applications. I get notifications when I get new applications. I get to contact prospective candidates all on Indeed. I can move people to the next level all on Indeed. And we can keep all of everyone on staff involved in the hiring process up to date, all at Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
In the second half of the season this year, I know they switched it over to the challenge system, which I think as a whole, I think most guys generally are fine with. I think, you know, a lot of times you know, as a pitcher, especially I'm biased, you know, I want to get, if I locate well on the outer half and it's, you know, maybe a ball off, you know, I want that strike, but I mean, I think it's fair. And I think the challenge system, if they can figure out a way to implement that, I think it could be pretty cool for the future of baseball.
Griff, you mentioned you're out there obviously in the Arizona Fall League. What has that experience been like for you as far as, you know, it's a pretty top level, not top notch hitters that you're getting to face kind of, you know, outing in and outing out. But how's Arizona been for you so far? Are you, you know, you said you were enjoying it, but what is the experience like as a kind of a someone who's kind of trying to add that final bit of polish for the big leagues?
Yeah, no, it's been awesome. You know, just the guys that I'm around day to day, definitely a lot of talent, and you know, the age range, it's anywhere from, you know, 19 year olds to, you know, 26, 27 year olds. So, it's definitely a good group of guys we have in Glendale here. Have a lot of fun competing with them, and you know, it's just great to always talk baseball with new guys. You know, we're around the same guys, you know, in our organization, but it's definitely cool to get, you know, other information from other orgs. But yeah, no, it's been an awesome experience so far. Really enjoying it, and yeah, I'm just really, really blessed to be here.
It's a really tough run environment out there. I was out there actually the first week of the season. It just seems like there, yeah, as a pitcher particularly, you have to operate with such like small margin for error. So what's it like going out there knowing that you're working on some stuff, but also still, you know, you want to have the decent looking stat line when you're getting out there every night. So how do you manage that?
Yeah, no, I think just kind of maintaining that competitiveness while you're out there. I think that goes a long way. You know, even if you are working on stuff, you're still out in a game competing for your team. So I think that's a huge part of it. And then, yeah, just having fun while you're out here. I mean, there's so many talented guys, like I said earlier, not only on my team, but on others as well. So it's just a whole lot of fun. But I think the most important piece, you know, even while you're working on stuff, is just maintaining that competitive attitude and, you know, wanting to win for your team.
Griff, of course, most people that are watching or listening to this show afterward are big fans of prospects and following what's going on in the minor leagues and in the Arizona Fall League. So, two-part question here. Who has stood out to you either through your minor league experience or in the AFL? And then can you also specify maybe one or two Phillies prospects that you've come across that have really impressed you?
Yeah, I mean, here specifically on Glendale, there's a lot of talent. You know, it's cool. There's guys like the McLean brothers who bring a lot to the field. We had, in the beginning of the year, or in the beginning of our time here in the fall, we had Colson Montgomery, who's a really, really impressive prospect. I faced Charlotte early in the year, so I got a little taste of him there. But, you know, it's cool to be on the same team as him. And then, yeah, as with regards to the Phillies, I mean, from top to bottom, I think we have a pretty strong organization, especially over the past few years. We're seeing a lot of really, really talented prospects come through the ranks. One guy that we have here, Otto Kemp, he's been swinging it really, really well. He kind of shot up through our org this year. He's a really exciting player over there at third base. He's got a lot of juice, goes gap to gap a lot, which is awesome. So yeah, he's definitely a really talented player.
Kind of just asking to, kind of off of that, I just want to ask you, being a Philly, like, you, it's got to be kind of cool to be in an organization where, you know, watching, you know, in October, obviously the Phillies ended up short of the goal, but at the same time, you're in an organization where that's the goal every year. I mean, you kind of, I kind of envision are going into the offseason knowing, okay, next year, hopefully I'm contributing for a team that could win it all. Like, what is it like being a Philly when you know kind of year in, year out, that's kind of the expectation is that if you're not playing deep into October, the fans are going to rightfully be unhappy because that's the goal every year. This is not a, okay, we're going to try to build it up for sometime down the road.
Yeah. I mean, exactly as you said, that's the goal. Just try to contribute at the big league level. I think that's the goal for every guy, especially as you're nearing AA, AAA. But yeah, no, it's definitely cool to see the big league team have so much success and to kind of get a, you know, a view into that during spring training and big league camp has been awesome. You see how hard these guys work and, you know, what it takes to play a full season. And, you know, by full, I mean into, you know, September, October. You know, that's always the goal. That's what you want to be doing. You know, I'm treating it like it's, you know, playoffs when I'm here right now, you know, making the moment a little bit big, playing against these talented guys. So, yeah, I mean, that's just like you said, that's the goal. And it's definitely cool to be a part of an organization that plays deep into October.
Let's finish with this. Give me a fun fact about Griff McGarry, whether it's something you do off the field or, you know, like when you've been in either a showcase or something and they say, hey, give us something that the broadcasters can talk about that's different, something family related, or what do you got?
I actually just got a Bernese Mountain Dog this last offseason. I'm a huge, huge Bernese Mountain Dog fan. I think they're beautiful animals and I've loved raising him so far. His name's Palmer. He's just over one now. So yeah, if I'm ever around a Bernese Mountain Dog, you can definitely bet I'm going up and petting them and, you know, giving them some love.
I love that. That's great. That's always a win. You say you're a pup guy, you immediately are going to pick up Phillies fans, right? That's an easy win. I love that. Well, Grip, thank you so much for the time. Enjoy the rest of the fall. Keep doing your thing. We'll keep following your path. And good luck the rest of the off season.
Appreciate that. Thank you guys for having me on.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Griff McGarry, part of the Philadelphia Phillies organization, as we're going over the NL East today. And we'll keep the conversation going actually right now with another Phillies pitcher, Helium Spot Time. Gentlemen, where are we at on Andrew Painter, who we are excited to see again very soon, JJ Cooper, and perhaps very soon in the big leagues?
I would say 2025. Yeah. I mean, maybe limited innings because he's obviously coming off of a pretty long layoff here because of Tommy John surgery. The timing of it and all meant he kind of missed a lot of time. But at the same time, you know, Jeff and I have been kind of, you know, and our prospect team has been having these discussions that what we're seeing from Painter in the AFL kind of just puts him right back, Jeff, into that discussion of the top pitching prospects in baseball. You want to see how a guy comes back in the AF, you know, comes back from, you know, from a major injury like that. The stuff is back to being the stuff. You got to, you know, you've gotten kind of to see him a little bit better than I have more recently. But what jumps out to you about Painter, and is he back in that discussion of the top pitching prospects in baseball?
Yeah, I think he has to be. And, you know, he has a full off season to sort of work in. He is getting some innings here in the AFL, which I think is important because it, you know, shows he's back on a mound. He's been in a competitive game. He kind of clears that hurdle a little bit. Going into the off season, can go through his off season work and sort of a normal fashion. I think the big question always with these guys, especially when you see the stuff return the way it did with Painter, is the command. And I think that that's the big question mark with Painter, just simply because he doesn't have crazy release traits. He has good movement on the fastball, but it's not great. It's not like, you know, outlier release height with Ride or anything like along those lines. Secondaries are good, but there's no Splanker, you know, like Paul Skeens 80 grade secondary or anything like that at this point in time. He's really got to hit his spots with that fastball with Ride and velocity, and that's what's going to play everything off of that. So I think that's the biggest hurdle that he has to sort of clear. I do think it's something he's shown before. I don't see any reason that it wouldn't fully come back. He's pitched pretty well in the AFL, you know, so I think that there's probably some glimmer of hope there as well. We haven't really moved him down as much as we have other pitchers that have dealt with injuries or have gone through, you know, Tommy John surgery, etc. And I think it's because of what the upside is of this guy. I wouldn't put him over Job at this point, but I do think that he's in the discussion, and it wouldn't shock me if there's some takes out there in the offseason with people that do rank Painter maybe a spot or two above Job.
Stay tuned on that front. I want to finish today with a story that I want to spend a few minutes on. So this popped up over the weekend, a report from ESPN about Cesar Altagracia, who was one of the more highly regarded international prospects and was pegged to get $4 million in a verbal agreement when he is eligible, or when he was eligible, January of 2027. Turns out, instead of being 14 years old, he's 19 years old. So, JJ, where are we at with falsified documents and players saying they're one age, but they're really significantly older? And do we feel like, I mean, I'll add a few things just so you can kind of unload on where you're at with this. Do we feel like the 1 year suspension is enough punishment to deter, you know, people from doing this? I can also make the case that, you know, it's not even necessarily certain players that are doing this. And yeah, obviously there's people, other people involved. It's just been a messy situation for a while now. You've got, you know, basically a salary cap system in terms of how much you're allowed to spend on international prospects. It really bothers me. Ultimately, we kind of joked about it on Foul Territory, where they are, you know, AJ and Eric Kratz had teammates who falsified ages and they were celebrating fake birthdays and all of that. But in the seriousness part of it, I mean, this guy was competing against players significantly younger than him, and it hurts the ethics of our system.
I would say also, like, I think our reporting, by the way, is that it was probably more like $3.5 million, although still massive contract. But I would say in some ways this is kind of the system working better now. This is a player who was slated to sign in 27. We can get into the ethics of agreements for players this far, you know, away and all that. But this is something that now does happen, which is every one of these top international prospects is investigated and effectively cleared or not cleared well before they sign. So this is kind of one of the aspects of this is that the system now has, you know, MLB investigators down, you know, boots on the ground that go through this and basically either determine that a player's, you know, accurate age and birth date, you know, name and identity and all that, or they're not. And in this case, it was caught well before, you know, he ever signed. So in essence, yes, it does mean that the Padres will have to kind of reassess who they're going after in the class of January 2027, but that's still quite a long ways away. And it wasn't something, it used to be that this was being discovered years after a player signed, or right after, or well after. Now, in many cases, it's being determined and discovered well before they sign. Obviously, there are still many issues going on with this that, you know, not just in this case, but in the cases of, okay, you know, there's also players who kind of have agreements. And then I can tell you right now, if Roki Sasaki decides to come over this offseason, there are going to be players who had handshake agreements, because you can't officially agree until the signing day, but they had handshake agreements because everyone's lining up their bonuses. And there'll probably be players who were told, oh, I'm sorry, but, you know, we're going to spend that money elsewhere. We're sorry. Those are just the breaks. There are issues to the system, but this is kind of one where the system did work. It did catch this well before anyone signed.
Here's my follow-up. So I think sometimes when there's a problem like this, some people will take the opportunity to be like, oh, we need to go further. We need an international draft. I don't know enough often about the case to say, hey, we should do this or we should not do this in our sport. I know there are a number of obstacles, but to me, I'm like, does this even apply? Because if there is an international draft and you're getting paid towards the upper end of the draft better than towards the lower end, or if you don't get drafted at all, aren't we still going to get falsified ages? I don't see how that is relevant here.
Yeah. How does that change anything here? Like if you're trying to, if you're a 17, 18, 19 year old trying to be more appealing, you would still have the same incentives. There would still be the same incentive to do this. A draft doesn't change that. And you could say, well, in a draft, all these players are going to have to be verified, you know, and all that, and go through a clearinghouse process and all that. But that's going on right now. That is why this was discovered. MLB discovered this well in advance of the player signing. No, you know, this is not something where it's kind of hard. Yeah, exactly, Scott. It's kind of hard to say how that would fix something here, because it wouldn't change the incentives and it wouldn't change when the player would be caught. Again, this was caught well before a player ever signed.
Yeah. It's a good call. I just think sometimes people have a narrative and they're just trying to run with it. And I'm like, different case here. So I just wanted to make sure we clarified that on this show, where you guys, you know, are being smart about this on how we're looking at the situation. So anyway, that was big news from over the weekend. And to swing it back to putting cap on this show, this is National League East week. So make sure you get yourself a Baseball America subscription if you don't have one already. Subscribe to this channel if you're listening to the podcast. Thank you. Please leave a rating or review if you like what you're listening to. Here's the rollout schedule, as every day we get a new top 10 and a team-specific chat at 2 o'clock Eastern, so join them at baseballamerica.com for that. We're here, obviously, every Monday at 3:30 East Coast time, but the rest of the week here, you got the Marlins Tuesday, Mets Wednesday, Phillies Thursday, and Friday the Nationals. Next week, we'll cover the NL Central. Week after, the NL West on Hot Sheet. We will see you next Monday.